This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin, and we're here once again to answer your questions.
My name's Barbara Brozier, and I live in Indiana.
Peter Jahnke from East Calais, Vermont.
This is Brian Booth.
I have a question. When do you think we'll be able to get back with, all of our friends?
I'm wondering why coronavirus affects people so differently.
Are all these aid packages and bailouts putting the country into so much debt that it may threaten the national security of the United States?
So I got my check. Is that it?
When will it be safe and responsible to me and my family to return to work?
Thank you for your time.
NPR journalists and outside experts are on hand to offer solid facts, to tell you what we know, and to correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. So we invite you to send us your questions, anything about your health, your economic worries, or how you're adjusting to life in a pandemic. Send them to npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, you can use the hashtag NPRConversation. But each night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell delivered a stern warning today that economic damage from the pandemic could be long-lasting. He said there could be a wave of business and household bankruptcies unless more action is taken.
We ought to do what we can to avoid these outcomes. Additional fiscal support could be costly, but worth it if it helps avoid long-term damage and leaves us with a stronger recovery.
He urged another bailout, saying the economic pain was especially hard on the poor. But Congress remains deadlocked over that next recovery bill. Republicans say they don't want to add more to the national debt. The Democratic Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, says the country needs it.
This isn't partisanship. This is science. This is humanity. This is about the family of America caring for each other.
If you thought your grocery bill was higher in April, you are not dreaming. The Labor Department said prices rose at grocery stores 2.6% last month. That is the biggest one-month jump in 50 years. The World Health Organization said, do not expect the virus to go away anytime soon or maybe ever. Dr. Mike Ryan said it could be much more like HIV.
I think it's important to put this on the table. This virus may become just another endemic virus in our communities, and this virus may never go away.
The death toll in the United States crossed 83,000 today. By now, the most common COVID-19 symptoms are well known: fever, chest pain, shortness of breath, extreme fatigue, loss of smell and taste. But one aspect of the virus poses a big challenge: asymptomatic carriers. In other words, people who are not showing any symptoms. So how do you know you're sick if you don't feel sick? Here with some answers is NPR's Ping Huang, who reports on global health and development. Ping, welcome back. Nice to hear you again.
Great to be with you, Michelle. Thank you.
So before we dive into asymptomatic carriers, we heard there from the World Health Organization that the coronavirus may never go away. So Ping, what does that mean?
Right. So that was from a press conference today. And Mike Ryan, who's head of WHO's Health Emergencies Program, said that it could become endemic and never go away. You know, something like flu, which comes back every year. If it happens, he said, we would work really hard to figure out new ways to live with it. You know, he brought up the HIV example, which was a terrifying virus when it first emerged in the 80s, but now it's something that we've developed treatments for and have mostly figured out how to live with. And he also said it's possible a vaccine could be developed that could stamp out COVID-19, and he hopes it will happen. But he also pointed out that we've had a measles vaccine for decades and not everyone gets vaccinated and kids still die from it. So whether it's a virus that's with us forever or whether it could disappear, we just really don't know at this point.
All right. Well, let's get to the questions now. First, we have Donna in San Diego.
I'm curious as to why there is such an emphasis on taking temperatures at stadiums, workplaces, and airports when people are pre-symptomatic or not symptomatic at all. I feel like this will give people a false sense of security that their environment is safe.
Ping, what about that? How indicative is temperature?
Donna's right. Having a fever is just one of the symptoms of COVID, but, you know, some people get coughs or headaches or lose their sense of smell instead. And also, some people can be contagious when they have none of these symptoms. So taking people's temperatures is like a dragnet with big holes in it. It works in finding some COVID cases. And in fact, back in January, the very first coronavirus case found outside of China was found through temperature screening at an airport in Thailand. So, you know, it does work in some some cases, but even since the beginning, people have been saying it doesn't catch everyone. So as things start opening up, I think it's really helpful to remember that the coronavirus is mostly spread through coming in contact with respiratory droplets, and that's where the usual precautions come in. It's important to keep 6 feet away from people if you can, to wash your hands before you touch your eyes or your nose. And how are workplaces and movie theaters and airports going to help facilitate that? I think that's something they're still trying to figure out.
Nick in Sunnyvale, California, wants to know about asymptomatic transmission. So let's hear his question.
What proportion of people who are asymptomatic spreaders eventually come down with the full or partial expression of the disease's symptoms? Do a substantial proportion of the asymptomatic spreaders remain symptom-free? What length of time are they contagious?
Okay, so let's take those one by one, Ping. First of all, do we know of any symptom-free cases?
Yes. As Nick mentioned, there are more and more studies testing people in settings like nursing homes and meatpacking plants and prisons, and they're finding that many people are testing positive without showing any symptoms. So far, there haven't been a lot of follow-up studies, but in the few that we have seen, about 75 to 80% of people who, you know, show up without having symptoms go on to develop them. So most of those people are what we call pre-symptomatic. The tests are catching them a few days before they're going to start getting fevers and coughs. And we know that people can be spreading the virus 1 to 3 days before they start actually feeling sick from it. And that's why we have guidelines about wearing masks to help prevent you from spreading it if you don't know you have it. And also why it's important to physically distance yourself from other people and to keep your hands clean.
So you said, so if about 70%, 70 or 80% do eventually get symptoms, that would suggest that about what 20% don't. So yep. I don't know if Nick thinks that's substantial or not. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say, you know, and there's questions again about people who are asymptomatic, how long they actually, you know, are able to spread the disease and how contagious they are. So I think it's a hard population to study right now, and it's an open question.
And this is a similar question to Nick's, but this is Nan in Chicago, Illinois, and she wonders about the length of time you're contagious.
If I test negative for COVID-19 today at 12 noon, and contract the virus at 12:01 p.m. today, at what point will I be contagious?
Ping.
I think that's a good question. And Nan, I actually don't know what specific time you would personally become contagious, but it would probably take a few days after you came in contact with the virus for it to establish in your body to the point where it can start to infect other people. And we think that people are most contagious when they're just starting to show symptoms. And most people who develop symptoms do so about 4 or 5 days after they get infected, although it can take longer in some people. So, you know, but we also have examples of people spreading the virus a few days before showing symptoms, and you can possibly spread it the whole time you're sick and even a few days after. So I can't tell Nan the specific window of time she'll be contagious. It depends on how her body responds to the infection. But in general, quarantining yourself for 14 days after exposure is a rule of thumb that would keep most people home when they might be contagious but not know about it.
As you've heard, NPR's Ping Huang is one of our reporters and experts who's been here with us, you know, night after night answering questions like this. And so if you have a question, you can still send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation. You can use that hashtag on Twitter, NPR Conversation. And now we have a phone number. You can also call us and leave a message at 202-403-0386. Again, that's 202-403-0386. Now, Tori in Portland, Oregon, has a question about antibodies.
I recently learned that an acquaintance of mine was in China in January, and when she returned, she had the flu and recently tested positive for COVID-19 antibodies. So my question is, if a significant number of people have had undiagnosed COVID-19 and have antibodies, how would this impact reopening?
All right, Ping. It's an interesting question.
Yeah, and there's a lot that we don't know about what having antibodies means. We think that if you've been previously exposed, you might have some level of protection against getting it again, but we still don't know how strong that protection is or how long it lasts. And that's something doctors are studying right now. They're actually following recovered patients to see how they do. So if having antibodies does mean that you're protected from getting it again, then you can imagine that some people might be able to move around more freely and not worry about catching the coronavirus or giving it to other people. But another issue with the antibody tests right now is that they're not fail-safe, and public health officials are really concerned on a personal level that a false positive result could cause someone to think they're protected when they're not. So there's a lot of work going on right now to figure out how accurate these tests really are.
All right, Ping, let me see if we can squeeze this last one in, because this is something a lot of people have been asking. This is Greg in Tucson, Arizona, and he has this question.
I'm wondering why coronavirus affects people so differently. Why there can be people who didn't even know they had it, all the way to people who are dying.
Ping, quickly.
Yeah, so older age and overall health are definitely factors. There's underlying health conditions. People who smoke or have diabetes and heart disease are more susceptible, and people who are older are also more likely to get very sick from it. But I've also heard a couple other possibilities being floated. You know, one of them is dosage, is the amount of virus you were exposed to initially related to how sick you get. And another major factor is that people's immune systems respond in different ways. So we've been hearing in rare cases that kids can get a very severe inflammatory response. We're not really sure why that's happening. It might have to do with genetics or what they've been exposed to before. It's something doctors and researchers are really interested in.
All right, that's NPR's Ping Huang. Ping, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thanks, Michelle. Great to be with you.
Up next, what if you need to see a doctor for a non-COVID-related problem? We answer your questions about treating other illnesses on the National Conversation with All Things Considered.